Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I will turn the meeting over to Rebecca Simon. Thank you, Rebecca. You may begin.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us for the National Kidney Foundation's Coffeehouse Conversations. My name is Rebecca Simon. I'm the Family Services Coordinator at the Pacific Northwest Transplant Bank in Portland, Oregon. I'm also a member of the Executive Committee of the National Donor Family Council, which is hosting this call for you today. I'll be moderating the call tonight. Tonight, we're going to be discussing communicating and connecting with transplant recipients. You might be interested in writing to the recipients of your loved one's organs or tissue donation. You might be wondering if you should write and what's involved with doing that. And we'll talk about all of that tonight. Our conversation is going to be led by Lara Moretti, and Lara is the supervisor of the Family Support Services at the Gift of Life Donor Program in Philadelphia. And she's going to talk with us about the process of communicating with recipients, some possible benefits and risks, and some of the emotions that you might be experiencing as you think about writing to the recipients of your loved one's donation of organs and tissues. We're also going to hear from Tom and Vivian Ganeau. Tom and Vivian are donor parents, and we're going to ask them to share a little bit about their experience and their feelings regarding this topic. But first, we're going to hear from Laura Weber. Laura received a kidney transplant, and she's going to share with us what that gift of life has meant to her. Laura?
Hi, thank you all so much for joining the call. And I have to start by just expressing my deepest, deepest heartfelt thanks to all of you who have made the courageous decision to donate organs, because it truly, truly is an absolute gift of life. It gives us as recipients a second chance. My name is Laura Weber, as I was introduced, and I have had chronic kidney disease since I was a young teenager. So for most of my active years going through teens and college, high school, and beyond getting married and having a family, I've juggled kidney disease along with all the other things that life brings your way as you mature and grow into adulthood. And when my youngest child was in college, I reached end-stage renal disease, which is the point where my kidneys could no longer sustain me. And on October 28, 2005, I was very, very blessed to receive a kidney transplant. And I want to share with you a little bit about what that's like when you get that call. It was just a difficult day for me. In fact, I didn't even go to work that day. I was still working full-time at this point, but I did not go to work that day. And about 12:30 that afternoon, a surgeon called me and said, "Laura, it's a great day. We have a kidney for you." And the emotions that a recipient goes through, at one point you're absolutely elated that, oh my gosh, I'm going to get to see my kids get married and see my grandkids. And 1 second later, I had such an overwhelming grief, because I thought, oh my goodness, this chance for me means that there's a family that's grieving. And you carry that grief as a recipient with you that has never left me to this day, 4.5 years after my transplant. So as recipients, we want donor families to know that our hearts do bleed with you. Not at all that we could understand the grief that you go through as family members. I don't want to minimize that in any respect, but we do feel your grief and very much have that pain of knowing that our second chance at life came at such a great cost. I made the decision shortly after my transplant to write to my donor family. And it's the hardest letter that I think I've ever written in my entire life. And some of you may not hear from your donors, and I wanted to share with you a little bit about some reasons why you may not hear back. There's a guilt almost that your second chance at life came at such a cost to your donor families, and it's so difficult to put into words expressing the gratitude while at the same time trying to be sensitive to the sacrifice that you have made in order to give us as recipients a better life. I really want you to understand, though, that even if a donor has not written to you, a recipient, has not written to you, that does not mean that they are not so grateful. Some of the volunteer work that I do as a result of my kidney disease, I volunteer both for the National Kidney Foundation and also for a foundation of IgA nephropathy, which is the kidney disease that I have. We work a lot with people from newly diagnosed all through recipients as they receive kidney transplants. And many of them don't write because they just don't know how words can possibly convey the deep conviction that we have, just appreciating so much what you've done for us. I was fortunate that my donor's family did write back to me, and I was able to meet them. But what I really want most, the thought that I want to most leave you with, is that your gifts mean the world, not only to recipients, but to our children that get to have their mom and dad, their son, their daughter, their sister, their brother. It means a whole life. And for me as a recipient, my life is absolutely divided into two portions, before and after my transplant. And I just would like to thank you all so much for your willingness. I encourage you to write to your recipients, because so often so many recipients tell me, I want to write so much, but I don't have the words. I don't know how to write. If you want to be in contact with your recipients, do write a letter to them, because they would welcome that. And even if they're not able to write back, it's only because they just don't know how to possibly say thanks, understanding the magnitude of sacrifice that it was on each one of you as donor families. So I thank you so much for the chance to speak with you and to share my heart with you. And hopefully I've been able to give you some understanding about how difficult it is and reasons why you might not hear back. Your gifts mean the world to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. And I appreciate you sharing your story. You made an important point when you said that though some families might not receive the letters from their recipients of their loved ones' organs, it doesn't reflect on the feelings of gratitude that these recipients are feeling. And I appreciate you putting a voice to that. Another thing that I forgot to add before I introduced Lara is that our call is going to last about an hour and a half. And then after that, we're going to give you all a chance to ask us questions or share your own thoughts. So right now, everyone's phones are muted unless you are a speaker. But when it's time to open up the discussion for your questions, we're going to let you know, and we'll tell you how you can do that. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Lara Moretti. And again, Lara is the supervisor of the Family Support Services at the Gift of Life Donor Program in Philadelphia. Lara?
Thanks, Rebecca. Well, good evening, everybody. Or if you're on the West Coast, good afternoon. As Rebecca said, I'm Lara Moretti, and I've been working with the Gift of Life Donor Program for about 7 years now. And the story we heard from Laura, her personal experience, is one that I hear often. My job is primarily working with donor families, but I do, in my role, work with a lot of recipients and acting as a liaison between donor families and recipients is an enormous piece of my job. And Laura's words, I do think, represent a large portion of the recipients, and I'm going to talk a little bit in more detail about some of the points she made, but I do appreciate her telling her personal story. I think it was clear from Laura that there's a lot of emotions attached with donation and transplantation on both sides. There's emotions for the donor family, and there's emotions for recipients. I don't need to tell you, those of you who are donor families, all the emotions that you are feeling. There's such a wide range of emotions, and that everyone's grief journey is different. And everyone, even people in the same family, experience grief in a different way. And if you decide you want to write to the recipients of your loved one's donation, that is also an emotional experience. It can be an emotional experience. You will be reliving the death of your loved one, perhaps, while you're writing the letter, bringing up memories. And those can be bittersweet. The memories can make you smile and cry. And also, I think, depending on where you are in your grief journey, you may or may not be ready to write. Some people who have shared with me that writing is actually can be very therapeutic and very helpful in their grief journey, but they had to be at that certain spot where they were ready to put the pen to paper. Recipient emotions, as we heard from Laura, there are so many feelings associated with getting a transplant. She talked about how she was so thankful and so grateful and so excited about this new chance at life, and then in the next breath felt the sadness and the grief for the family she knew out there that she didn't know who they were, but she knew somewhere there was a family that had experienced a significant loss, and it was the worst day of their life. And recipients carry that with them. And she did mention guilt. I hear that a lot. A lot of recipients will wonder, well, why am I alive and my donor is not? Why? Why am I? Why was I chosen? And they can feel very guilty about getting that gift. Recipients also share with me that they feel an enormous pressure to stay healthy so that they don't disappoint their donor family. They consider themselves as a steward of this gift, and they want to take care of this gift the best that they can, which is a good thing, but that's a pressure that they feel. And so all of these emotions on both sides really can impact the letter writing process, feeling ready to write, ready to respond, finally actually sending the letter. The process about writing in between recipient and donor family, either party can initiate correspondence. I think the donation and transplantation community has come a long way and really understands that writing can be enormously helpful on both sides. And so the families are encouraged to write and the recipients are encouraged to write. No one's required, but everyone's strongly encouraged because we know that for many it can be a really meaningful experience. If it's a donor family, you would write a letter and you would send it to your procurement organization. This is the organization who spoke to you about donation, either in the hospital or over the phone. It could have been an iBank or an organ procurement organization. If you are not sure who that is for you, you can contact the National Donor Family Council after the call, and they will be able to help you find out who the procurement organization is for you and your family to help you with this process. So you'd send the letter to that organization. The organization then would send the letter on to the transplant center or the tissue bank, and then that letter would then get sent on to the recipient. That's the simple process, but there's lots of steps in between, which I will go over in a little bit. And the reverse is also true. A recipient writes their letter, gives it to their transplant center. The transplant center sends it to the procurement organization, and the procurement organization then sends it to the donor family. And the reason there are so many people involved is that everything is private and confidential. Your information as a donor family is not shared with the recipient, and the recipient's information is not shared with the donor family. In my role at Gift of Life Donor Program, the recipient's information is protected even from me, so I can't send a letter directly to the recipient. I go through the transplant center because they're the only ones who have access to that information. The role of the procurement organization when letters come to across their desks is they review each item to make sure that it's going to go to the appropriate person. Families can write one letter, and say we want to send it to all the recipients. Or they can write a letter and say this is for the kidney recipient, another letter is for the heart recipient, a third letter is for the liver recipient. It really varies, and there is no right or wrong. The letter goes to the appropriate person through their transplant center. And then we provide confirmation to the writer that the letter has been forwarded. I don't want anyone to worry that the letter is floating out there in the mail and they don't know if it's been sent on. They're also available to offer any advice, suggestions, and guidance to writing the letter. I often hear from families that even donor families, struggle with what to say or what's okay to say. What can I share with them about my loved one? And my advice is to share what you feel comfortable sharing. Many organizations do have confidentiality guidelines as far as how much information can be shared. In my organization, we limit to using first names only, not last names, but you would want to speak to your procurement organization to find out what the process is for you. I do want to talk a little bit about the difference between tissue gifts and organ gifts, and the and how writing to tissue recipients and organ recipients are different. It's important, I think, to talk about a little bit that at the time of donation, the exact identity of an organ recipient is known. We know exactly where the heart is going. With tissue, those gifts are often not transplanted for months after the donation, and there are many, many more potential tissue recipients than there are organ recipients. So the exact identity of tissue recipients isn't always known. There's an ongoing challenge about getting surgeons who utilize tissue gifts to recognize the value of the letters from donor families. I mentioned that the donation and transplantation community has come a long way with understanding the value of this. The organ donation side has understanding it, and there's still room for the tissue side to understand it too. And we're working tirelessly with the medical professionals who use tissue gifts with their patients to understand the value of these letters. Many tissue recipients aren't always aware that they've received donated tissue. And the other thing is that because their identity isn't known at the time of donation, the tissue banks rely on trace cards or cards that are returned by the surgeons in the hospitals that give identifying information about the recipients once a transplant takes place. Surgeons at this time aren't mandated to return that information, so sometimes the identity of recipients is unknown. So all of these pose challenges to communication between donor families and tissue recipients. But also, even when a recipient's identity is known, it takes longer because there are more people involved in the process, more lines to go through until that letter gets to the intended recipient. But it's not impossible. There's been some great recent successes in tissue recipient and donor family communication. The Musculoskeletal Transplant Foundation's Linking Lives Through Letters program has had amazing success. The Pathways Thank You Letter program and the Thanks to You program with LifeNet Health all have had successful programs linking donor families and tissue recipients. With that said, many OPOs, organ procurement organizations, still struggle with their local tissue banks regarding communication. I don't want to dissuade you or discourage you to think it won't happen, but we just want to share with you the reality of the situation, because I often hear from families they don't understand why with tissue it takes longer or there may not be a response. And that's another major question that I often get from families. Will I hear back? Will I hear back from the recipients of my loved one's gifts? I think we heard from Laura there that she said it was the hardest letter she's ever written, and I hear that time and time again. She also mentioned, and Rebecca highlighted, that for even those who don't receive a letter back or ever get a letter from a recipient, it doesn't mean that they aren't grateful, but that there are reasons why sometimes recipients don't write. Many of them have long medical recoveries. While the transplant was successful, many of these patients had a lot of medical complications prior to their transplant because of their organ failure, and they have a long road for recovery. So a lot of them don't feel like they can write until they feel like they're in a better health overall. Many times I hear that recipients are afraid of upsetting a donor family. They say to me, I don't want to send a letter and remind them of their loss. And when I get that comment, I respond back with, the families I work with are thinking of their loved ones every day, and your letter is not going to be a bad reminder at all. And so I encourage them to write anyway. I think, though, when a donor family initiates correspondence, that also may be that door that opens. So if a recipient is unsure of how a family might feel about hearing from them, if they get a letter first, then the message is clear, we want to hear from you. And so often getting that letter first from a donor family allows the recipient to feel more able to start the process and write to them. And as Laura said, many, many recipients are just unsure of how to appropriately say thank you. We use that word thank you so often in our daily lives. Thank you for holding the door open. Thanks for the glass of water. Thanks for that piece of paper from the copy machine. How do we use that same word to describe what it's like when our life has been saved? It's very difficult, and recipients struggle with coming up with the right words. And sometimes they struggle and they feel like they will never come up with the right word. So instead of saying the wrong thing, they choose to say nothing. They often feel like they have to write a lot. And when I hear that, I tell them that it does not have to be the next great American novel, that there are some beautiful cards that I have seen that have been sent. Sometimes they are simple sympathy cards, simple thank you and thinking of you cards that have been sent. And it doesn't have to be lines and lines and lines of text. A simple card that expresses how you feel can be very meaningful for families. And often I think I hear from recipients that they write a letter over and over and over again because they want to make it perfect, and yet it never gets sent. And it just goes to speak to how recipients recognize how enormous this gift is, and they put so much thought into their letter. The other question I often hear from donor families is, well, can I meet my recipient or the recipient of my loved one's gifts? And the short answer is maybe. The majority of donor families and recipients don't meet, but some do. Many of the recipients and donor families will continue to just write through their procurement organization and transplant center, and they feel fine with that, an occasional letter back and forth, and they don't feel the need on either side to take it to the next level. Sometimes recipients and donor families will only write a few times, and then correspondence stops for whatever reason, and it's not initiated again. And then there are some who never hear from the recipient, and then there are some recipients who never hear from their donor family. The National Donor Family Council has a communication guidelines that are available on the website of donorfamily.org, and it talks about the process and some of the guidelines as far as this kind of communication, and I would encourage you to take a look at that, but also to speak to your procurement organization to find out exactly what their process is and their policy on corresponding and then ultimately communicating directly. When I do talk to families about communication, whether it's direct or even just the correspondence that goes on with them but through our organization, it's important to recognize that writing and communicating has potential benefits and potential risks. And these are also outlined in the NKF communication guidelines. There are so many positive emotional responses to writing, the opportunity to express joy, to know that your gift made a difference. As I mentioned earlier, it can help in the grieving process. For many families, it allows them to have a feeling of control and empowerment. When your loved one died, you couldn't control that. You were in a situation that was out of your control. For many, saying yes to donation gave you some control, empowered you to do something about a terrible situation. And writing to your loved one's recipients is another way of empowering yourself. However, when you communicate directly, it can be even more empowering. It's nice to often get rid of that middleman that takes all the time in between of getting the letters back and forth. It can reinforce your decision to donate, and it's an opportunity to share your loved one more about them with the recipient. The risks to it are some of the negative emotional responses. I think it's mostly about what are their expectations of this new relationship. It's unlike any relationship any of us have ever had. What if there are differences that people aren't really ready for? The recipient, the donor family, are often different cultural, religious, different socioeconomic status, different education levels, and how will that impact this ongoing relationship? There's often anxiety related to this new relationship, related to, I think, again, the expectation of what this new relationship will be. There's often pain and sadness and a feeling of responsibility for the gratitude felt by this recipient, and that can be hard. Recipients, I think, in general, feel so grateful, almost indebted to the donor family, but that can be an uncomfortable situation to be in when they get to know them personally. And I'm not trying to dissuade anyone from corresponding, but these are all things to think about when thinking about corresponding and communicating directly with the recipient. Again, all these things that I mentioned are online on the donorfamily.org website. And I will be on the call to answer any questions in particular. But at this point, I'd like to introduce Tom and Vivian Gannell, parents of Curtis Gannell, a donor who gave the gift of life to many. Tom, Vivian, are you on the call?
I think this is Jennifer from the National Donor Family Council. It sounds like they weren't able to join the call, so maybe something happened.
No, can you hear us?
Oh, are you there?
Yeah.
We're here.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Good. We thought maybe the weather was holding you back.
No, we were fine. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, I
great.
Can hear you okay.
Good.
Okay,
good.
Thank you very much, Lara. So this is Tom.
This is Vivian.
Okay. We live in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We have three children, two boys and a girl. And our journey really started back in July of 1987. Our two boys were in high school, and our daughter was about ready to start high school. And our middle child, Curtis, who had just finished 10th grade, he wasn't 17 yet, so didn't have his license. So he went out for to visit his friends on his bicycle. They lived about 4 miles apart. He was going a few hours, and we received a phone call from one of Curtis's friends to tell us that he had been hit by a van while trying to cross at an intersection. When we arrived at the scene, Curtis was unconscious, but his only visible injuries appeared to be a broken left leg and a few scratches. But then they were originally going to take him to a local hospital, but as they were putting him into the ambulance, he stopped breathing, and they then rushed him immediately to the Cooper Trauma Center. And it was there that we found out that Curtis had a swelling at the base of the brain, and that had cut off the oxygen and blood supply to his brain, and so that's when he was put on life support. We stayed with him around the clock, and eventually, though, we come home to get some rest, but we had received a phone call around 6 a.m. to come back to the hospital as soon as possible. And when we arrived, we were told that Curtis had already been tested, and they determined that he had no brainwave activity. And now they were going to have two neurologists test him for brain death. And I had asked to allow us to watch both of those tests, which they agreed for us to do. And after the first test, though, we really knew that Curtis was gone. And it was really at that time that Vivian was the actual one that asked about organ donation. We were told we had to wait till after the second test. And after the second test, they finally agreed for us to be put in contact with a transplant coordinator from the Gift of Life organization. So Curtis was pronounced brain dead around 12:10, and we spoke to the coordinator around 1 o'clock. And by 2, we had agreed to donate all of Curtis's organs, plus his cornea and his skin.
At the time when we donated Curtis's organs and tissue, I didn't think about what was going to happen afterwards. All I knew is my son died at the age of 16, and all I could think of is I needed to save other lives. I didn't want anyone to feel what I was feeling if there could be hope of saving their loved one's life. I also had a selfish thought. It was also a way of keeping a part of my son Curtis alive here on Earth.
Our real contact originally with Curtis's recipients was the letter that we received from the Gift of Life, and that came with a few days after his death, and we learned that Curtis's heart and lungs were transplanted into a 53-year-old gentleman with two children. One kidney went to a 34-year-old gentleman with two children, the other to a 17-year-old boy. His pancreas was transplanted into a 45-year-old man with three children, and we did agree for this liver to be used for research. About a week later, we received a letter then from Will's Eye Hospital about his corneas, and also a letter from Crozier Burn Center about the skin we had donated. Annually, I was told we could ask for an update, which I did. So I kind of kept track of the recipients based upon letters that we had received from the Gift of Life organization.
back then, it wasn't a common thing for recipients and donor families to meet. And about a year and a half after Curtis passed away, Tom and I went to Thomas Jefferson Hospital to do a talk during Organ Donor Awareness Week. And I didn't give it much thought about who all would be there. And I was very nervous because I really didn't know what Gift of Life wanted us to really talk about in our story. And when we got to Jefferson, there was other speakers too, and we sat and listened to the speakers. And one of the speakers was a recipient, a real live recipient. We had never met one. We listened to him and tell everyone how thankful he was to have a second chance at life because of a stranger cared. He spoke how he took care of himself because of that gift. We were introduced to him later, and we hugged each other, and I had the feeling of joy that someone else had donated their loved one's organs and that a recipient was standing there by me. He showed so much love and thankfulness. I had never met any of Curtis's recipients. It would have been nice to have met the one, especially the one that had his heart. Just to have felt and hear it beat would have been great, but it never happened. Through the years, I have met many wonderful recipients, both men and women, and have had many hugs. It doesn't matter that I hadn't met our recipient, though it would have been nice, and sometimes I feel jealous and envious of those who have met them. 22 years ago, everyone was afraid of donor families and recipients meeting. You could say Tom and I were one of the pioneers. We went to many meetings and talked about recipients and donor families meeting, and it took many years before it happened. The main thing that happened was my son died. He didn't die without a purpose. In my eyes, he became a hero because he was able to give life to people.
Yeah, we started doing a lot of speaking events, mostly at hospitals. I know we went into health fairs. The one health fair we went to actually was for the New Jersey State Fair. And when we come up, I realized that the people that were there before us were all recipients, and they were talking about what organs they received. Finally, one of them turned to us and said, well, what organ did you receive? And I said, oh, we're a donor family. And there was like dead silence. It seemed like forever before one of them said, well, I've never met a donor family before. So we went and explained to them what we had gone through, and eventually they asked us if we would go come down to their Cape Atlantic support group meeting and talk to other recipients. And that was about 50 miles away from us down the shore. We agreed to do that, and it was really neat when we got there because they'd go around the room, introduce themselves, and tell what organs they had, and we realized that every single one of Curtis's organs were represented in that group. They also said they wanted to adopt us as their donor family. And I'd asked them if any of them had written to their donor family. And almost every one of them raised their hand. Some said they'd written three or four times. And then one of them sheepishly said, but I've never sent a letter. And when we asked, we only found out that only two of them, like I've been mentioned before, had ever sent a letter because they didn't know what to say. And so then we encouraged them to send a letter to their donor family, and within a couple of months, almost every one of them had then sent a letter to their donor families. And we're actually still part of that group some 15 years later. So we became involved with other Gift of Life events and organizations over the years. So we've had an opportunity actually to meet dozens upon dozens of recipients, and every time, that's like the greatest thing in the world. One of the groups that we ended up becoming involved with at the startup was the Southern New Jersey Coalition. It started about 11 years ago. And they decided to have a group that would go out and just talk to high school students. Primarily, we started out talking to driver's ed classes. And I became a part of that group and eventually chairman. And that currently, we probably have about two dozen or more recipients to go out and talk. And last year, we did about 112 days of school talks all over New Jersey, eastern Pennsylvania, and we talked to over 16,000 students. And that's pretty much currently what involves my total, almost my total work schedule, if you want to call it a work schedule.
The most exciting thing to me is the transplant games. This is like a mini summer Olympics. This is where the recipients and the donor families come together from all the states across America. The recipients compete in swimming, track, tennis, bowling, basketball, volleyball, and a lot of other games. My favorite is watching the children compete. Recipients do the competing and winning the medals, and the donor families do the cheering and the hugging. This is also where the donor families and recipients come together a lot and do a lot of hugging and saying thank you. This year, the games will be at Madison, Wisconsin, July 30th to August 4th. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Vivian. And Tom, I really appreciated you sharing such an important part about how so many recipients may not have sent their letter, but many have written letters, many letters, and just don't know how to send them. And I thank you for sharing your story and your journey, a little bit of your journey and a little bit about Curtis. And Lara, thank you for pointing out how individual each person's grief journey is, and that writing to your loved one's recipients is, again, another part of that individual journey. So now we're going to open up the discussion to all of you on the call today. One thing, if you want to know the name or contact information for your local organ procurement organization or your tissue bank, so that you can find out more information about contacting your loved one's recipients, we're going to ask you to hold that question until after the call so that we don't take up all of the remaining time with that. If you want to know how to find the right organization, we'll ask you to contact us. This is the National Donor Family Council. We're going to ask you to contact us again after the call, and we'll help you find the right place to reach out to. You can email the National Donor Family Council, and that's at www.donor.donorfamily@kidney.org, or you can call them at toll-free, and the toll-free number is 1-800-622-9010, and you can ask to speak with the Donor Family Services Department. So I'm going to say those again. You can email www.donorfamily@kidney.org, or you can call their toll-free number at 800-622-9010 and ask to speak with someone in the Donor Family Services Department to find out which organ procurement organization or tissue bank you can help in your area that can help you. So if you have any questions about any other aspects of communicating with recipients, or if you'd like to share something about your experience, we're opening up the call for you to do that now. We might also have some professionals. We also have some other professionals on the call who might want to share something from their experience of working with donor families, and we're ready to take your questions now. Ashley?
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your request, press star 2. One moment, please, for your first question. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1.
This is Jennifer at the Donor Family Council. I just wanted to say the email address is actually donorfamily@kidney.org. There's no www at the beginning. So if you're emailing, it's just donorfamily@kidney.org.
Thank you, Jennifer. Sorry.
No problem.
Your first question comes from Karen Caffrey. Your line is open, Karen.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
My question is, I lost my husband about 4.5 years ago, and he, of course, was an organ donor. And we heard back from several of the recipients. We got really nice cards. And I have not been able to respond back to them until perhaps now. And my question is it too late to write back to them?
Your question is it too late to write back to the recipients of your husband's organs that I've written to you?
Yes.
And I think Lara, can you answer that question?
Sure. Oh, Karen, thanks for asking. I think that's an important question, and I often hear that. I don't think it's ever too late to write. There, just as there is no time frame for grief, there's no time frame for letter writing. When you feel ready, it's ready. It's ready for you. It's right for you. And I would imagine that if your recipients were able to hear your question, they wouldn't say to you, no, it's too late, you've missed your chance. They'd say, please write, now that you're ready, we'd love to get that letter. So I hope that this call has kind of encouraged you to write, and if you write tomorrow, next week, next month, that's fine. It's when you're ready, and I think when your recipients get that letter, whenever you're ready to write it, they'll appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, and thank you for sharing the information on how to contact my procurement organization.
Thanks, Karen.
Your next question comes from Carolyn Stapleton. Your line is open, Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn.
Yes. My question is, my first part of my question is, are corneas considered to be tissue?
Are corneas considered to be tissue as opposed for with regards to corresponding to the recipients of
right.
your loved ones? And I can speak on behalf of this. This is Rebecca. You may contact your local iBank, the procurement organization that does recovery of corneas, and they can absolutely facilitate the correspondence process for the recipients. It is similar in its process to that of organ recipients. Is there anyone else who wants to add in information to that?
No, I would agree. What, Carolyn, are you a donor family?
Yes. My husband was only able to, from my husband, they were only able to use some bone and his corneas. So I understand that the bone would be tissue, and from what I heard today, it sounds like it may be difficult to find out where it went. So I was wondering about the corneas.
Yeah, corneas are a little bit easier because they're limited in number, much like, there's organs are easier to follow. Corneas are easier, but they, like tissue, are not usually transplanted immediately, so there's a delay sometimes in getting that information. But the organization who you work with, who approached you about donation, would be able to connect you with the iBank to find out about your husband's cornea recipients.
Thank you very much for that information.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions?
Your next question comes from Carla Baxter. Your line is open.
Hello, my name is Carla Baxter, and I'm actually the Family Services Coordinator for the Finger Lakes Donor Recovery Network in Rochester, New York.
Hi, Carla.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
And I'm so happy to hear from both the recipients and donor families. And I believe her name is Karen, who had the very first question. Just the other day, we got a call from a donor family that wanted to send correspondence after 18 years. So it's just to say it's never too late, and we were so excited about it, So it doesn't have to be immediate, as you mentioned. It can be at any point when you're emotionally ready. So, again, we thought 18 years is never too late. It wasn't too late for them. So whenever you're ready. So I just wanted to express that to you.
Carla, thank you for sharing that. That's amazing, 18 years later, to be ready to write.
Yeah. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Triple One Tersad. Your line is open.
Okay. Hello.
And good evening to everyone. I'd just like to make a few comments and then ask some questions. I really appreciated the point that Laura did mention before, that, and it's a known fact that whenever a recipient receives an organ, that initial reaction is utmost joy and gratitude. And many times donor families, I know that I've had many contact with donor families, they say, in that same vein, that same gratitude and joy, why some are very reluctant to even send a card or write an initial letter. But as we all know, that everyone has a different personality and everyone reacts to situations differently. But I like that Tom and Vivian, you know, the job that they are doing, this is what we need to do, is to really spread the word and just keep plugging away, because both donor families and recipients, we want to know, for example, as a donor dad, when my son passed away, my initial reaction was, who did get his organs? How are they doing? That's the first reaction any donor family will want to know. Even through the pain and the hurt, we wanted to know where those organs went. So all my fellow donor families who are having that pain and very reluctant to write, I just would urge you guys to just write, because the recipients want to know. Likewise, the recipients, when you receive those organs, like my recipients which I spoke to this not too long, I asked her that very question, what was your first reaction when you received my son's organs? Her first word was, I was joyful, I was grateful, and I really wanted to write back, write immediately to you. And I've known of families who have responded in the nick of time. And she did write, really emphasize that she wanted to wait 1 year before she responded to us. However, she did respond earlier because we took the initiative to write to our donor, to our recipients rather, very quickly. But the thing is, most of you guys are listening, and I know this has always been on both sides, recipients and donor families, what basic solution, if there's any, or areas of hope there is that can bring more responses and communication, even dialogue and meetings from both recipients and donor families. But
and I think you bring up a very good point in that some families feel ready to write, correspond right away, and some families feel ready many years later, or they never are ready. And it really is the personal journey that Lara had spoken of when that timeline works for you with regards to correspondence.
This is Catherine Paikin. I work with Jennifer Martin at the National Kidney Foundation. I work a lot with recipients. And a lot of people think, like, when you have a transplant, you're cured. It's not. It's still a chronic illness and treatment. And many times I've heard that donor families are told, oh, even though your recipient won't write, they're doing fine. To a transplant doctor or nurse, maybe they're doing fine because they have certain levels of health that they can measure. But emotionally, sometimes recipients truly suffer and go on their own type of reinvention journey and have struggles unique to their individual personalities as well as related to their illness, and a tremendous journey to go on their own. Often they care deeply. And at the same time, what donor families don't always realize is sometimes there are ones that write and write to donor families, and the donor families, for the very same reasons, don't write back to the recipients. They have their unique struggles that they're going through as individuals, and often they don't write back. And as somebody had mentioned, sometimes 18 years later, 13 years later, somebody will be able to write. But and accepting a gift is hard. Just sometimes people have difficulty accepting a gift. They feel that they have emotional issues. They feel they're not worthy, that they, for whatever reason, or maybe they're not good enough. They have their own things that they have to deal with. So it's not personal. It's not that they don't care, but they often have issues that just need emotionally to be worked out.
Thank you, Catherine.
Rebecca, if I may add one thing, that when I heard the previous caller say, for those donor families who perhaps write or don't feel able to write but yet are interested in knowing how the recipients are doing, if you don't hear back from the recipients of your loved one's gifts, you can request updated information from the procurement organization. We would then contact the transplant center to get updated information on how the recipient is doing and share that with you. So even if you don't hear from the recipients directly through correspondence, it is possible to get updated information on how their health is doing. So if that's if you've written and you haven't heard, but you want to know how they're doing, you can request that. And it may take a couple months to get that information, but that's something that you can request.
Thank you, Lara. That's a really good point.
Your next question comes from Judith Moreno. Your line is open.
Hi, Judith.
Hi. My daughter passed away in 2003, and at that time, her husband and I decided, you know, to do the donor transplant route. And I felt very discouraged by our procurement division, and I was told that all information had to go through her husband. And he's not been very forthcoming about information. I don't think it's as important for him to find out things as it is to me, being
okay.
A parent. And I wondered, has policy changed since 2003? Is there any legal reason why they can't, the procurement division can't give me information, like you said, on how their health is and whatever?
That's a good question. Is there someone that would like to answer that question? One of our speakers?
Sure, I can answer that, Rebecca. Well, Judith, I can hear your frustration and can understand how it must be difficult to not be able to get information related to your daughter. Legally, as her husband, he's considered the legal next of kin. So he would be the one who probably ultimately had to sign the paperwork. And he is the contact person legally. I know in my experiences, when there are multiple family members that are involved that are not technically the legal next of kin, I have tried to reach out to that person and ask them for their permission to release information to the other family members. Mm-hmm. So whether it's getting something in writing from your daughter's husband that the procurement organization can have on file that would allow them to share information with him, that might be something to request. That's how we've worked with it, because legally there are privacy rules and HIPAA, which is there to protect individuals, but can often make things complicated for family members, and it is hard. If you can't yourself communicate with your daughter's husband about sharing that information, perhaps the procurement organization might reach out to him on your behalf.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Judith.
Your next question comes from Carol Pavel. Your line is open.
Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hello.
This is actually Doug and Carol both. Johan,
okay.
Do you want to speak? Go ahead.
No,
hi, Doug.
Okay, hi. Thanks for taking our call this evening, folks. We're a donor family. Our son, Brian, was killed in a construction accident in October of 2007. And it was interesting listening to Tom and his wife, because the time frame of that day was so very, very close to the same word that we got about Brian and the brain swelling and all that. And again, when the neurologist gave us word that Brian was gone, we immediately, without second doubt or whatever, began the organ donation process. For us, it's been absolutely tremendous. And a little bit about our story, but then I do have a question. We have been fortunate, I think, probably, in the respect that we've had a very good experience through this whole process. When we donated Brian's organs, immediately what came to us, particularly to Carol, Brian's mother, is, you know, something positive has got to come from this tragic thing, and we haven't been disappointed in that regard. In January of last year, a little over a year ago now, we we'd been receiving letters in 2008 from the recipient of Brian's heart and liver. And so we went through LifeSource, which is the organ procurement folks up here in this part of the country, and who we are now also volunteers with. And they handle Minnesota, South, and North Dakota, and then the western part of Wisconsin. They were just tremendous for us. And then finally in January of last year, we were on our way out of the house, and we got a call from our family coordinator stating that because we had filed the paperwork from both directions, that we were ready to talk in person. And it was amazing because within 4 days we were face to face with each other, and the recipient of Brian's heart and liver and his wife flew here. And we met and spent a weekend with them, and it was just like we'd known each other forever, that we'd been lifelong friends, and that friendship hasn't ended. And then in May of last year, four of their five adult children, spouses, grandkids, and everything came here, and we were able to again spend some more time. The one thing that became very apparent when we met Dick, and that's the recipient's name, and it's already been talked about a little bit. Dick expressed such tremendous deep gratitude towards us for making the decision to donate Brian's organs, but at the same time, he expressed extreme guilt. And I think it was a healing process for both of us, actually. And his guilt, obviously, partially is because he recognized that someone had to die so that he might live. When Dick received Brian's heart and liver, he had probably about 6 to 8 weeks to live, and that would have been it. He received the transplant, he has been able to meet two more grandkids and live life. And like you said, he's not cured. He knows he's not cured, but he's been given a great chance and to do all the things that he loves. So that was part of the guilt. The other part of the guilt was because of his age at the time he received the transplant. Dick was 62. Right, hon?
Yep.
Okay. And he was almost certain that he would have wanted us to have a younger recipient. and we just assured him over and over that makes absolutely no difference to us. They are tremendous people, and we're just so happy that the way that things have worked out in light of Brian's tragic death. His thing at this point is he is a bit perturbed that we haven't heard from the other recipients, and we keep assuring him that as we've been talking, and he knows this too because he's now a volunteer himself, and he goes around speaking that everyone has their own time, but he more or less joking says, "Have you heard from anyone yet? How come they're not writing to you?" type thing. And this is my question. We have now made the decision, Carol and I and our daughter Katie, we have now made the decision that we are going to take the first step and write a letter to the recipients that we know of, the recipients of Brian's kidneys and things in that order. And we're working very closely with LifeSource on that, and our family coordinator has been tremendous in that regard. Has anyone had any experience in that regard, working backwards, so to speak?
Doug, thank you for your question. Your question is, has there been experiences where families who've heard from recipients but have made the first step to writing to recipients as well?
Right.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, Rebecca, I can answer that.
Great.
Well, Doug, thank you for sharing your story. It sounds like you've developed an amazing relationship with your son's recipient, and
I've worked closely with Jill and John from LifeSource, so I know you're in good hands with them. There are certainly families that I've worked with where they are, you know, in direct communication with one of their loved ones' recipients and have not heard from anyone else, and then maybe are just starting the process with communicating with some of the other recipients. It's rare that, you know, everyone is kind of communicating at the same speed and same level because everyone's experience is so different. So it's great that you have that experience with Dick. I think when you, if you choose to write a letter to your son's other recipients, you can decide if you want to include in that letter that you've had the opportunity of meeting, of communicating and meeting one of your son's recipients and how healing that has been for you. And that might just encourage the recipients who haven't written up till now to realize that you really do want to hear from them. You know, the only, I guess, caveat I would suggest is, you know, by sharing that, they may also think, oh, my gosh, he's going to want to meet us, too, and we're not ready for that.
Right.
So maybe in your first letter to them, you don't jump right into that, but you let them know maybe that you've heard from the other recipient and how healing that has been for you and how you would very much like to be able to hear from them as well so that you would know how they're doing. And I think it's perfectly fine to initiate that correspondence. And, again, it may open that door if they are feeling for whatever reason that you might not want to hear from them. Getting that letter from you should clear that question right up.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Patty Lynn Eanes. Your line is open.
Yes. I'm the mother of my son was 22 years old. He died a tragic death 10 years ago. He was murdered. He had, there were 7 people that received his organs. The most special one was that, not that all of them aren't special, is my son was at UNC dying while this little girl named Sarah was also dying at Duke, and she needed a heart. And long story short, come to find out that a year later that I was at work and this girl and her grandmother and aunt came to my work. I guess they told them, you know, where I was. I got to meet the child. My son's birthday was February 17th. His name was Jeffrey. This little girl, her birthday was also February 17th. It was an amazing experience getting to, she came and brought me yellow roses, and yellow roses happened to be my favorite. And I got to hug her, and it was just a very emotional, amazing experience, and we all went out to lunch and, you know, gave her pictures of Jeffrey. She gave me pictures of her, and she kept the pictures by her bed and says, this is my guardian angel. And through all of that, several years ago, this is just to prepare people for that really want to meet that other person. She had several years, but she did die. And my daughter was only 8 years old when this happened to her brother, and she was young and resilient then. Now that she's a teenager, and she got to meet the girl Sarah, and she thought she had a big sister sort of kind of replacing her brother. She went through a very traumatic experience, like she lost her brother all over again, and as an emotional teenager. So I'm just saying that, you know, people that, you know, really want to meet the recipients, just to prepare yourself that, you know, hopefully not, but they could, you know, have died, and you just got to prepare yourself and realize that, you know, that could happen. And are you prepared to deal with that? I didn't think about it, and I don't think that I was, because it was very heartbreaking. And I just wanted to, you know, let, you know, try and give that story to people just so they can, you know, make sure that, you know, it's not all happy endings and, you know, roses and this people goes on living till their old and dying days. And and I'd still like to meet the other people that, you know, my son's kidney and other parts, you know, but I'm afraid to. I mean, I had one family who the wife wrote to me and thanked me, and, you know, now he can spend more years with his children and, you know, me, his wife, and I'm afraid to write back because I'm afraid that what if he died? And I just kind of wanted to share that with everybody.
Thank you, Patty.
Yeah, Patty, thank you for sharing that, and I think you bring up a very, very important point. I'm so sorry for the death of your son and also for the death of Sarah. It is another loss, and when recipients die, whether it's related to the gift or for other reasons, it can absolutely bring up grief for the family all over again. Whatever was unfinished, and even if you thought you were finished, it's a new grief. You created a relationship with this young woman. I think as a heart recipient, that's even, as I think Vivian mentioned, there was something really special about a heart recipient, and I think a lot of donor families feel that way. And it is something to consider when corresponding with recipients that you're entering into this relationship, and if things don't work out perfectly, how is that going to be? I mentioned earlier about if you don't hear from recipients, you can request updated information. When I talk to families about that, before I do any research, I ask them, should I get bad news? If I find out a recipient needed to be transplanted again, is on the list again, has passed away, do you want to know that? 99% of people tell me yes. I want to know everything. I've already heard the worst thing in the world. Nothing can be as bad. But I always try to preface it by, you know, having people think about the fact that there may be some bad news. So even if you aren't corresponding with a recipient or meeting a recipient like you did and having a relationship, even finding out bad news can be emotionally very difficult because I think, as I heard Vivian and Tom say, it gave them so much peace to know that there was a part of Curtis out there and that it helped them in their process. And then should we find out that a recipient is no longer alive, you know, what does that mean for your grief? I don't know if Tom or Vivian, you want to share some of your thoughts on that, but I think that's an important thing to consider for all families.
Yeah, from, like I say, I wanted to, that was one of the big controversies between Vivian and I, was wanting to know. I wanted to know how they were doing. Vivian didn't, because she wanted to think that they were going to go on forever. But I was really, it was traumatic when I did learn when one of them had passed away. But I didn't have the connection that Patty did. I just feel so sorry for you, Patty, because I know that you almost had to go through that same thing over and over again. And although I did know that they're passing, I didn't have that really, you know, close connection like you did by actually knowing them.
No, thank you.
Now with me, even though Tom wanted to know, you know, I always found out when one of them passed away. But I think the one that bothered me the most was Curtis's one kidney went to a 17-year-old boy at the beginning, and this was like the week of his death, and we had read it in the paper, and we just knew it was Curtis's kidney. And unfortunately, the young man rejected it, and I think that's the one that bothered me the most, was the fact that, you know, we were trying to save, Curtis was trying to save a life, and for some reason the young man rejected the kidney. I think once I worked that one out. The rest of it didn't bother me as much. But, you know, in time, you know, you go on and it gets different.
Thanks, Vivian.
Your next question comes from Nancy Mosqueda. Your line is open.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. My son had just passed away. Well, it's only been 10 months. And so it's very fresh. And mine is that my question is it common to feel like maybe I never want to know?
Take your time.
I'm not the one that decided to donate. It was my son. It was on his license.
So he made the decision to be a donor.
Yes.
Okay.
So they had, you know, had to talk to me, and they were asking questions. But I, even if I would have said no, it would still have went on because he's the one that made that decision.
Okay.
And at the time, I didn't know because my son was, you know, he was 28 years old, and, you know, he made it on his own, and they had, when I went to the hospital, he was killed in a motorcycle accident.
Okay.
A girl cut him off. So the time he got to the hospital, he already had passed. So they told me he could be a tissue and skin donor.
Okay.
And so when they told me that they needed to talk to me, they said, your son was a donor. And I didn't know, but his girlfriend knew. So it was a kind of shock, but I still, you know, sat there an hour or so answering their questions and everything about my son. So, you know, in March 6th, I'm going to attend the Field of Gold honoring the donors. And so I guess really right now I'm just struggling with my son's death. And to me, sometimes I think, I don't know if I ever want to know, because I feel cheated, because somebody else will have my son's cornea and a valve from his heart and his skin. But I do try to participate because I did get a rose for the float. I put one in his name, and it came on the computer. I saw what, you know, I wrote and stuff, so I'm trying because my son wanted to do that for people.
I hear that.
So my question is it just really normal to feel that maybe I never want to, or is it just time that I have to give myself since it's been so fresh?
Thank you for your question, Nancy. Is there someone in our from our speakers that wants to answer that question?
I think time helps. It won't take it away. It'll never take it away. But you have a long way to go to work on your grief. And it's all right to not wanting to know now. And you'll change because you won't be the same person you were before your son died. And in time, you start to think differently with things. But you just have to learn, just be good to yourself, you know, and do what's good for you as you're going through your grief period. And, you know, if you don't ever want to, you know, or if you're never, you know, happy or you know, accept the fact that he donated, that's okay. But I think eventually, down the road, you're going to find some comfort in that.
Yeah, I'm trying to do that because, like I said, I am going to attend the Field of Gold. Mm-hmm. And I sent his picture, and I wrote 30 words that they wanted to, and my family and I were going. So I'm trying to, you know, accept it, and I'm trying to honor him. And I want to be a part of everything that they do send me. That's why I did the calling. Accepted this today because, you know, I want to.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Nancy, you know, Vivian made an important thing when she said that, you know, it'll never be the same. I had a family once tell me that grief is their new normal, and what's learning what that new normal is, and you're honoring your son in the ways that you are working for you right now. And that goes back to what Lara had said when she started speaking about how different each person's journey is and how different that grief journey is and how unique it is to you. So you're the best judge of what steps work for you.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Your next question comes from Clara Elam. Your line is open.
Hi.
Hi, Clara.
I'm not sure how I do this. My son was killed in 2002 by a drunk driver. He was 16 years old. He was gone before we got there at the hospital, and they told us that he was a donor. I don't know what it's called. He just was a donor, I guess, on his license. And we went through all the steps and stuff, but I have no memory of what they donated and stuff and how I did. And I want to try to find out, you know, what they donated of him and how I could send letters and a picture to the family.
Clara? The organizations that can help you find the procurement agency to work with would be the National Donor Family Council. So you can email them at donorfamily@kidney.org, or you can call them at toll-free 1-800-622-9010, and they can get you in contact with the procurement agency that can help you get that information, okay?
And I had a comment to that lady where her son had just passed away, and she didn't think she'd ever want to find out. I was the same way, and like I said, it took me about 7 years and 3 months to do it. But I feel like there's parts of him out there somewhere, and I want to find out.
Thanks, Clara, for sharing.
This is Jennifer at the National Donor Family Council. I just wanted to let everyone know that we will email you next week if you registered for the call and provided an email address. We'll send you some follow-up information after the call, and that way you'll have our email address and phone number as well. So if you didn't catch that or have a chance to write it down, look for that next week, and you will be able to contact us through that. And
thanks,
we'll be
Jennifer.
Able to help you with any remaining questions that you might have.
I think we have time for one more question, correct, Jennifer?
Your next question comes from Diane Milbourne. Your line is open.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to say that my husband died November of 1997. So it's been over 12 years for me, and I am further down the grief journey than the last couple callers. But I did feel exactly like they felt in the beginning. Like, I didn't want to know anything about my husband's recipients because I thought that if anything happened to them, that would be another loss that I couldn't handle. But as time went on, I did want to know. And I know this probably sounds mean, but I felt that I gave the gift, and I felt that the recipient should write the thank you note. But as time went on, I got to meet recipients, other recipients, not my husband's recipients, but other recipients, and I do know that that has to be the hardest letter to write. I understand that now. And it's been a long time for me. It's over 12 years. But I would like to say to the panel that anybody that does deal with recipients, I would like to say that, and Laura, if you're still listening, my husband didn't die to give you a kidney. My husband died, and now that's the sad part, and that's the tragic part. But the good part is he was able to help three people live. And okay, that Tom and Vivian said, that part of him is living on, and that's what gives me hope, and that's what helps me heal. So thank you for listening to my comment.
Diane, thank you for that comment.
And thank you so much. This is Catherine. I do work with recipients, and they, when someone like you gives a message like that, it means a lot to them to hear it, even if they know it intellectually.
I think it
in their heart from yourself means
a lot. Like, I would like to be able to relieve all the guilt that the recipient has, because the good thing is they're living on. They're living. And when I see a recipient who's healthy, you know, and has a second chance at life and is grateful and is taking that gift and living every day with it, that is a real honor to me and to my husband.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you.
And I really want to thank all of our speakers. I want to thank Catherine Paikin. Thank you for speaking also. And Laura and Lara and Tom and Vivian. Thank you for all who called in and asked questions and gave comments and listened and shared your stories. And knowing that the correspondence process between donor families and recipients is a unique process, and it's extremely personal. And knowing the decisions of what works for you, know that you can find support through your local procurement organization, and you can find support here through the National Donor Family Council. And you'll be receiving an email from a follow-up email, as Jennifer said. So thank you again for being a part of this call.
Thank you. This ends our call, but we do ask if everybody will just stay on one more minute. The operator will ask you a couple of questions about how the call went. So it's just a very quick little poll that you can do in a minute or less if everyone will just stay on one more minute, and our speakers can stay on for 1 minute as well. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you so much.
We will now begin the polling session. Your first question, did you gain a better understanding of the topic? Press star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Again, your question was, did you gain a better understanding of the topic? Press star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. Next question, did you understand each panelist's presentation? Please press star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. Again, the question, did you understand each panelist's presentation? Please press star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. Your next question, was the call the right amount of time? Please press star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Again, was the call the right amount of time? Star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Your next question, will you tell others to join Coffee House Conversations telephone calls? Please press star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Again, will you tell others to join Coffee House Conversations telephone calls? Please press star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. Last question, was the information personally helpful to you? Please press star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. Again, was the information personally helpful to you? Please press star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. And that concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.
Hello? Thomas.